Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. We have Steve's back in house after our having a brief guest host. We have a new whiskey to talk about. It is Proper 12 Irish Whiskey. I know that Conor McGregor has something to do with it. I don't know if it's his brand or
it's
his whiskey. Okay. It's solid. I mean,
you know what? So it's good. I mean, it's Irish whiskey, so it's not going to have like some of
It's a 40%.
Right.
So 80 proofer.
But it's not going to have some of the just various flavor notes that you'll get with
like scotch. You're not going to get smoke. You're not going to get peat.
And it's not, obviously it's different than bourbon. And we particularly dabble in a lot of bourbon and a lot of scotch and a lot of peated and smoked scotches. And so this is a little bit, I guess I would describe it as tame for us and our particular taste buds and our particular liking, but I think it is very good. So comparatively, I would think that I would compare it to a Powers or a Jameson.
Sure.
Obviously, because they're Irish whiskeys. The difference with this one, though, is it's a hint sweeter.
I would completely agree with that.
And there's not, with Jameson and even with Powers, there's a distinct taste of the wood. And it's not too over-the-top oaky, but you can definitely taste the wood in those. And in this, you really don't taste the wood that much, which typically in a whiskey, you do want to taste the wood, but they pull it off well, a good balance. It doesn't sting. I mean, it's only 80 proof, so you're not going to get a lot of bite. But the overall flavor is good, and this is a sipper, or if you need to do a shot and you don't want it to come back up or whatever, if you're not a shot taker, then this could be a shooter for you.
Yeah, I mean, this is – Conor McGregor would not be offended if you shot his whiskey, I'm sure. And I give this an 89. I think it's solid.
Yeah, I give it the exact same score.
89. Okay. Okay. Just not quite over the goal line, but it's still really, really good. Definitely a step.
You know, if they come up with a premium offering, right? That's maybe a little stronger.
Right, cast strength or something.
Aged
like that.
A little longer, or triple wood or something along those lines. I'm sure it would probably be pretty good. It'll be interesting. And I know this is
And again, we're not chitting on it. It's really good.
Solid. Again, this is not... I mean, you want something on your... I mean, at the price point, I think for this is like...
25? I don't remember what it'd be. 28?
I know it's less than 40 bucks.
Yeah.
And maybe less than 30. So if you're looking for a bottle of something, because
good conversation too, right?
Good
it's Conor McGregor.
Right. What does the name
Irish
mean?
Whiskey that isn't...
Yeah,
does the name mean? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, me either.
I'm sure if there's someone out there.
Someone out there, email us, tweet at us, whatever. What a week. So, Michael Cohen testified, and I, being in the fact that right now I'm not traveling for work, watched way more of this than I should watch.
Jim, you don't have a job.
Ain't got no job. Actually, I do have a new project, but that's none of your business.
Oh, okay.
None of your business. I do.
Okay.
I haven't started it yet, so I guess I got no job. But anyway, so I watched 4 hours of Michael Cohen testimony, and I don't want to beat up the same stuff. It's been run through the media. Everyone will have heard all the stuff. The best part about it, there were a few great moments. One of them was that I'm going to forget which congressman was questioning Cohen, but Cohen, the guy basically said, we're talking about a known liar, a liar without remorse, a liar with whatever. And Michael Cohen interrupts, are you talking about me or the president?
Ooh.
And the guy just lost his mind. He's like, this is my time, sir, not yours. So I had some fun with that. The most talked about moment was when Congressman Meadows did a little thing saying, so Michael Cohen starts it by reading his prepared statement, which said that Donald Trump is a racist, a con man, and a cheat. And... Congressman Meadows, I want to say from North Carolina, but I could be wrong about that, said, he had a black woman who works for the Trump administration or Trump campaign standing behind him and said, she doesn't think he's a racist. Who are you to say that?
No, so that's Lynn Patton. She actually works for HUD.
Okay.
She
did work in the campaign, though, right?
She worked on his campaign. She now is she runs HUD in New York. And she used to be a party planner.
She
was a party planner for the Trump
organization. The head of HUD used to be a brain surgeon, so.
And he gave her, like, I'm just like, well, fuck. I feel like I should have, like, if you're just handing out HUD jobs to black people, I feel like I should have threw my hat in the ring. You know, make me head of HUD over Texas.
One, you are not a Trump supporter, and two, you actually understand what housing and urban development is all about. We don't need any of that.
None of that nonsense going on.
Right. Anyway.
But shit, I mean, if you're just throwing out a couple $100,000 jobs, then, you know. So with that whole kind of exchange, I think there's a couple things there. So, you know, Meadows trots out Lynn Patton, and she just stands there. She doesn't say anything. Correct. She just stands there. It's the whole idea of, well, if Trump's a racist, then how would he ever have a woman like this working for him? Right. And the way I counter that is Andrew Jackson can't be a racist because black people worked in his house and he had black children.
They
were slaves. The mothers were raped. And, I mean, the people who worked in his house were slaves. But, I mean, nonetheless, no, is Lynn Patton a slave? No, she's not. But the whole idea or the whole premise that, well, if I am seen in a picture smiling with a black person, if I have black friends, if I hired a black person or something like that, then I can't be racist.
Right.
Because, no, I mean, like the meaning of racist doesn't mean that you completely isolate yourself away from people of different races or people of a specific race. And racism isn't, like, what people have done to counteract the whole, you know, claim of racism,
right,
or charge of racism is tried to narrow it down to, I'm not in the KKK and I'm not a white supremacist with a swastika tattooed on them, so I can't be a racist, right?
Well, the excuse always of, I've got a black friend, therefore I can't be racist. This, to me, having a black employee is even less powerful, right? Because you can hire someone because you could, I'm not even using this as an example that it proof of anything, but there are racists out there who will hire black people purely to deflect their perception.
There are racist people out there who marry black people.
And then there's that.
Right? There are racist white men who are married to black women or have children with black women. Right? And vice versa. White women who are racist as shit who are married to black men. Like, the whole idea, I mean, listen, racism isn't simple. It's not just black and white. Pun completely intended. Right, I mean, there's levels to it. It's a complex issue, and it's part of the reason why we haven't figured it out. It's not just as easy as flipping a switch on a court case. There's deeply embedded thought processes and feelings and emotions. And you know, we hear the word systemic racism, not understanding how some of the things that we just call normal and part of everyday life, but they stem from the practice of slavery, right? And they stem from Jim Crow, and they stem from the segregation era, right? And there are things that kind of got reworked a little bit because those things became unacceptable, but they still permeate their way through our lives, right? Like the whole idea of the way our redistricting works and redlining and gerrymandering, and you hear all those terms and people hear them all the time and it's just like, oh, well, it's political and blah, blah, blah. That comes from trying to isolate black people after segregation, during segregation and then after, and draining the resources so that they couldn't compete with white people for jobs and education, so that the people who had the power at the time wouldn't lose it to this new group of people that are entering the system, right? And if you take race away from it, right, and you said instead of making it about black people and white people, if you look at it, it's just you had people who were in power who didn't want to give that power up.
Economically advantaged people versus...
Right. And so then it transferred from a race issue to an economic issue because people in Appalachia will complain like, well, we have the same problems that they have in the ghetto, so it's not about race. Like, well, you're an unintended consequence. Right, like you're a casualty of this war for power. Right, ideally, if they could have kept all the white people rich and made sure all the minorities were poor, then that would have been ideal. But they couldn't. They had to sacrifice someone. You're in the hills of Appalachia. All you've got is coal and weird shit going on up there, so you guys are stuck with what you got. You know, I mean, and
I could go on a whole road there with the fact you don't have the same police versus society issues in Appalachia that you do in inner cities.
You still have some pretty shitty crime situations.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, and like some poverty, serious drug issues. Like and
serious drug issues between meth and opioids and everything else that go on between right. Kentucky and North Virginia and everything else. All those same sort of problems that you see in inner cities. Right?
Right. You don't have the knocking someone's door over, catching them with a dime bag of weed and putting them in jail. In consistent numbers like you do.
And you can argue that the police situation in those areas in West Virginia, Kentucky, in
parts of Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, right, Virginia,
in Appalachia, we'll just right. say, they have an even more, like the system of corruption amongst the police there is even more unique, right? I mean, because you have that kind of good old boy South situation where, I mean, do you have the racism factor? No. But do you have police that abuse their power in multiple ways in those situations? Yes, you do.
Well, and you also have a severe segregation, right? I mean, if you go to Charleston, West Virginia, I don't know the exact demographics, but there are neighborhoods or towns or townships around Charleston that are probably 99% white, and there's ones that are 99% black.
But that's, I mean, that's, I think that's, segregation is something that it exists everywhere.
And it's Cleveland, partially
Boston,
right.
Chicago.
I guess as everyone attributes it to big cities, though, but it's not.
Dayton, right? I mean, wherever you go, I mean, like you.
Charleston, West Virginia, right. Again.
Now you have, you have black people who live in predominantly white neighborhoods, and you have some neighborhoods that are right. nice and mixed and diverse and everything else, but you still see a lot of segregation in a lot of places.
Right.
Right. But the funny thing is people are like, oh, well, we have a black neighbor, so we're diverse as fuck. Like you have a black neighbor. Right. It's like, oh, well,
since you are the black neighbor right. in multiple occasions.
Right.
Okay. So one thing that was interesting about that conversation, though. So Congresswoman Tlaib did get questioned by Congressman Cummings,
Elijah Cummings?
Elijah Cummings. But what's the... He's the head of the subcommittee. I don't remember what is it chairman?
Sure.
Okay. And he particularly called her out and said, are you calling Mr. Meadows a racist? And she specifically said, no, I am not. However, the act of putting a token black woman behind you and saying this represents proof that racism doesn't exist is in fact a racist move. And it got pretty heated between the two of them. I don't know how much of it you saw. But
I didn't see it, man.
Okay. He was visibly upset with and he, so if there's anything worse than I've got a black friend, he did the I have black nieces and nephews, or my nieces and nephews are people of color. I frankly don't know.
Well, I know what Meadows said, and honestly, he's whatever. He is what he is. But I think so. What you saw between Tlaib and Cummings,
okay,
and Elijah Cummings, though, are kind of an old school versus new school line of thought, and with you have a new sort of black activism and socialism or black activism and like
social awareness,
activism, right, social right. awareness, things like that, where there's a big push to, if you see something racist, call it out, right? Like if you see something that isn't right, if you see a microaggression, like all that, like you call it out, right? And you lambaste them right. and you shame them for their racist act. And Elijah Cummings, I think, is, you know, obviously with his experience and the amount of time that he's been around, whether it's Congress or through the civil rights movement and everything else, just takes a different approach, a more subtle
sure.
approach, where he's seen direct, like just unadulterated racism, right? Just
accepted publicly, like
right. I mean, he saw segregation. He saw people getting, you know,
fire hosed
and you know, German shepherds being sicked on people, and little girls and little boys and kids in school being yelled at by teenagers and adults, who those people are now grown-ups, but and they're still out there, they still exist, right?
They're right.
An entire part of our country, but everyone's just like, nope, racism's gone. So he saw that live and in action, right? And they fought back, and it's not that anymore. And I think what you see, whether it's Jim Brown, right, or an Elijah Cummings, their approach to dealing with racism is a little more matter of fact, right? Like, I mean, Cummings is looking at it as it's a stupid stunt. We're here for a specific purpose. That doesn't necessarily prove anything. And I think what Elijah Cummings is saying is like, listen, what he's saying, like he's trying to, you're not going to win in the court of public opinion. You're not going to win anybody over with your argument of calling him a racist for bringing a black person out, because right. The other side is going to say, well, we totally agree with Mark Meadows and Donald Trump. Donald Trump's not a racist. Look, he's, you know, between Ben Carson and this Lynn Patton woman, and there's pictures of him in the 80s with Jesse Jackson, so he's not a racist because of his affiliation with black people, period. Right? And you're not going to shift them off of that. You're not going to shift them off of that. Right? Like, whether they believe it or not, they're just not going to move.
Whether it's an opinion or a defense.
Right.
Right.
And I think his whole point was, like, if we're going to call people out for being a racist, then we need something better. I don't think he was saying that Meadows wasn't a racist. I don't think he was saying that he didn't agree with her necessarily. I think he was saying that's not enough. Like, we need actual proof, and we don't have it. And what we're doing is we're working against ourselves to a degree, because, yeah, we're calling it out, but people aren't listening to you calling it out. It's falling on deaf ears. And I think the problem is that there's got to be something in the middle. Right, like, you can't just ignore it, but at the same time, you know, if you call out every single thing that you believe and feel is racist, after a while, it falls on deaf ears, right?
Right.
And so there's got to be a balance between calling out blatant racism and dealing with these microaggressions and these things that have racist feel to them, right? And how you do that, I don't know what the way
is. And I think the real issue is that the feel is very different depending on your race and your age. Right,
yes.
Because this could be an entire other show. In fact, I'd almost like to do an entire show focusing not on this specific issue, but on the concept of how, you know, if you're a 20 to 30 something white kid, you grow up hearing racism is dead, and I think that fuels a lot of the, well, why is this still an issue? Why do we have to hear about it? Whereas if you're a 20 or 30 something year old black person growing up, your parents taught you, and rightfully so, here's the shit we dealt with. It was way worse for your grandparents, and don't let this shit happen to you, and don't, right. And again, we could talk about that for hours, and maybe we should, but in this particular case, it was just a really well-highlighted, well-documented example of what we're talking about. And the fact that she specifically said, no, I know this guy, I've worked with him, I'm not calling him a racist, I'm saying the act you just did was that kind of thing, and I'm not letting it slide.
And I think to a broader point, there's a lot of this whole Cohen situation, there was a lot of acting going on.
Then there's right. that. The best part about that was the congressmen and women who had to act like they didn't know the answer to their question. Like, are you suggesting that Stormy Daniels received money from the president? Gee, really?
Yeah.
Willis was dead the whole time.
So, I, you know, obviously I didn't watch it. I was busy at my
job.
That I have.
Fuck you.
Because I'm a productive member of society, Jim.
You're around, such a dick.
But sitting around right, in t-shirts right, watching C-SPAN.
It was CNN, I'll have you know.
And
which is even worse, by the way.
But
at least C-SPAN would have some, like, you fuck.
So I didn't want, but I think I told you before that I thought that this was, I didn't think we were going to get anything.
A lot of theater, yeah.
There was a lot of theater. I mean, honestly, what was Cohen going to say that he probably hasn't already said to Mueller? What did he bring? For it to be something that, all right, well, we're going to investigate this. We're going to, whatever. Like, you need to bring proof. You need to bring receipts.
Yeah. He's convicted. He's been convicted of lying to Congress.
And that's the other thing. Like, he's got to bring some form of proof other than what he's saying.
Right.
And even still, he's the worst witness you could bring because he's already been convicted of lying to Congress. So I just...
And that was a big chunk. Steve, a lot of it was Republican comes up. You're a proven liar. Why would we trust you? You're here for a book deal. You're here for a sentence reduction.
It's a valid... Now, the sentence reduction thing, well, no. I mean, he's already been sentenced.
Right.
Right? I mean,
in theory, it could come into play in a hearing down the road, but it's not like he made a deal.
Right. And so, you know, it was... You knew how this was going to go. You knew the Republicans were going to say he's a proven liar. You knew Democrats were salivating, and you knew that he was going to say what the Democrats wanted to hear. right? And it's almost the first thing out of his mouth. He's a racist, he's a liar, he's a con man. I mean, it was, if I don't know if I could, if someone, if, you know, M. Night Shyamalan could have written it any better.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's just
I see lying people. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
And they are.
I don't know how productive it was. I mean, obviously they're trying to lay grounds for impeachment. I've said it before. I think it's a really bad idea. I don't, just because you can doesn't necessarily mean that you should. And if that's really the direction that they're going, and they're gonna go through with this, knowing that it's gonna go nowhere, it's gonna create just more division than is necessary. And ultimately, I think it ends up probably pushing the president into a second term.
I mean, essentially, what happened with Clinton, right? I mean, Clinton got caught in the blowjob gate, and got impeached. The Senate didn't convict him, and that basically made him borderline, sympathetic might be too strong a word, but it rallied the people who support him.
Well, there were
by landslide.
And there were people who shifted, who saw that it was completely ridiculous. That
right.
It was just like, listen, that whole thing started over a land deal and ends with, you know, jizz on a dress. You know, I mean, it just, like, as vulgar as it sounds, that's what it was.
Right.
You know, I mean, and Ken Starr has taken a lot of heat on his role in that and what he did and how he went about that. And, you know, how ethical was it? I mean, it's something that we talked about in law school when I was in law school. And, you know, just kind of the role of the special prosecutor and, you know, how you go about an investigation and knowing when to bring charges and how to bring charges and being motivated politically. And I think he crossed a line there. Was it illegal? No. But was it ethical? Definitely. Probably no.
No.
You know.
Right. And we could do this for hours. While all this was going on, President Trump is in Vietnam meeting with Kim Jong-un to nail down
the... He took a train, by the way, from North Korea to Vietnam.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's a train from Pyongyang to... I guess.
You
would think you would take a convoy or something.
Well, so he couldn't... He doesn't have his own plane, and the last time he met with...
What?
Yeah, so he doesn't have his own plane. The last time that he met with Trump, he basically borrowed a 757 or something from China.
Okay.
And then a lot of people, he took some heat from the global community. Like, this is how dependent you are on China. You don't even have your own plane.
You got no job. You got no plane.
So, I mean, you and Kim Jong-un
have that in common.
Neither of you assholes have a plane.
So, I'm now being compared to Kim Jong-un. That's awesome.
Get a job.
Get a job.
You low life. So.
This is so awesome.
So, but he does have a train, right? Like, so I guess it was this armored train that he took from Pyongyang to Hanoi. And then I don't know if he got it all the way to Hanoi. I think he had to, like.
I'm just envisioning Kim Jong-un with, like, a transfer pass.
Right. And then he had to, like, drive for 3 hours once the train got to a certain spot.
Your ticket hasn't been punched yet.
Right. Obviously with the 4-year-old, I just think of Polar Express.
Which I hated, but okay.
Do you want me to do, man?
That's your problem, not mine.
I mean.
I took my niece and nephew to see it years ago and people got mad at me for talking about how much I hated the movie. But anyway, off topic. Yeah, so Kim Jong-un and Trump meet. Essentially nothing came of that, from what I can tell.
So, no, nothing came of it. I've said this before, and I feel even stronger about it now because there's a report that came out of China that backs up what I'm saying. President Trump, one of his big things, okay, so they're trying to get a deal on denuclearization, right?
Right.
North Korea, give up your nukes and we'll remove the sanctions. And North Korea is saying, we're not going to give up our nukes, but we'll stop testing and we also want you to, pull the sanctions. And so Trump, I think it's a good move. Like, listen, if you're not giving up your nuclear weapons that you have and ending testing, then we are not going to remove the sanctions, period.
Right.
We'll come back to the table. So I stand by. The reason why they're more than willing to agree to end testing is because they can't test anymore. Okay? They literally blew up the fucking mountain. Like, they only test nukes in one place, right? And that place... literally collapsed on top of itself. It's a giant fucking mountain, and half the fucking mountain collapsed into itself, right? Completely destabilized the region. And China came out with a report because they share a border with China, and it's like 100 kilometers away.
Right,
it created an earthquake, and then it created multiple aftershocks. And China's like, listen, dicks, stop. Right? Or else we're going to have serious problems that involve, you know, people with three heads. Right? I mean, because you're talking about, you know, nuclear waste and leaks and wind and all that other shit, like all that scientific engineering danger shit, whatever. But that is what's going on. So the reason why they're not testing is not because Donald Trump is this great negotiator and he's scared of Donald Trump and Donald Trump handled it the right way. The reason why they're not doing it anymore is because they fucking can't. Right? I mean, like, don't give me any, oh, well, they just do it somewhere else. You've seen the island. Where the fuck else are they going to do it? They also, and the motherfuckers also, they also, did you know they flew a nuclear missile into one of their own cities? I guess
what?
It didn't detonate. Right. I guess, I don't think it had an actual nuclear payload on it. But it was like a practice missile that landed in one of their own cities.
No, I knew nothing about this.
Right, like, so I pulled this article, and I'll send it to you so you can read it. But listen, this whole idea that Donald Trump is this great negotiator.
Please tweet it too, so our
I'll put it out there. But the whole idea that Donald Trump has you know, Kim Jong-un's ear and has, you know, outsmarted him and convinced him not to test news, it is complete and utter bullshit. The reason they're not testing is because they can't. Right? I will stand by that. I don't care who you are coming up with, no, this is because Trump said, fuck you, fuck that, that's not true. They're not doing it because if they do it, they will blow a hole in the fucking earth. Like, I don't know.
All right. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'll be curious to see how this plays out in the next couple of weeks.
Now, the other part of it, they're not going to give up the nuclear weapons that they already have.
Right.
Right? Like, which is the biggest part of it. Right. One, I'm telling you, they can't test, so they've already agreed to not test anymore.
It almost justifies, it gives them an excuse to, like, not reveal their cards, right?
Right.
I mean, they can't do it.
Well, they're never going to say that they can't do it, but, I mean, it's clear that they can't, right? And how they resolve that issue, I don't know. The other part is, they're not going to give up their nuclear arsenal that they already have. I will go back and correct myself where I said I didn't believe that they have any, but they do.
Right.
That's been confirmed. I can't say for sure. I haven't been to North Korea and seen them for myself. But based off the things that I read from multiple resources, it seems as though that they have figured out a way to arm nuclear weapons. How effective they are, I don't know. How far they can reach, can they get to the USA? I don't believe so. I'm not an expert in this. But they can
damn sure get to Tokyo or Seoul. But,
right. I mean, so that, you know, they can get places where they can do a lot of damage to our allies. So, you know, they do have that, and it doesn't seem like they're going to give that up. The other part is North Korea is, they have really advanced their cyber terrorism team.
Sure.
They've done some pretty vicious hack. They hacked Sony. So they pulled off this crazy bank heist where they stole damn near $1 billion. It was a big deal. They ended up catching the hackers, and they're in the process of being prosecuted. I shouldn't say they stole. I know they attempted.
Okay.
Maybe to steal like $1 billion from a bank, and they got way closer than anyone feels comfortable with their ability to do it, and they're primed to be able to attack electrical grids and power systems and impact entire cities and hospitals and things like that. So that's also something that they have in their back pocket. How it plays into the whole nuclear argument, I don't know. But it's just something to kind of keep your eye on when you're dealing with
that. Obviously, a nuclear attack is more scary from a casualty standpoint, but the ability to disrupt commerce, to disrupt, you know, day-to-day lives, we're so damn dependent on, you know, banking and everything related to
electronic transfer. They can do something like that and get in, completely disrupt the banking systems or multiple hospitals or an electrical grid, wipe out a city. I mean, you remember the blackout on the East Coast, you know, was 15 years ago. I was in college, but do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
There's a massive blackout on the East Coast it wiped out New York. I mean, we felt it in Massachusetts. I know they felt it here in Ohio. I remember that, early 2000s, probably 2003.
I was in South Carolina at the time, probably.
Okay, I don't think it made it south, but I know it was.
We didn't have electricity down there yet. No, I'm sorry, that's not true. It was a great city, actually.
But there was a huge blackout in the early 2000s, and they said that it was, you know, a massive power station that impacted. Right. Okay, fine. But that sort of thing, like, that caused a shit ton of problems. Now, was it state-sponsored terrorism? I have no idea. I doubt it. I mean, someone said that it was some sort of transformer. It seems odd that a transformer, actually, they said it was in Ohio, that blew out everything all the way in the East Coast. But, all right, I mean,
this is ringing a bell. There was another one in Michigan that, like, wiped out a whole bunch of shit, and maybe that's the same one.
Mm.
All right.
So either way, but I mean, the whole point is that's another dangerous and another mm-hmm. threat
sure.
that North Korea poses that you can't ignore when you're having these conversations about how they deal with their denuclearization.
Right. But ultimately, you know, again, you and I have both given Trump credit for engaging in conversations with North Korea. I mean, I hate it whenever someone says you can't talk to so-and-so because that gives them legitimacy. They don't need to talk to a president of the United States to get legitimacy if they are the dictator of a fucking country. And if you don't talk and if you don't communicate, nothing ever happens. So credit for doing it. The actual results, to be determined with a leaning towards not so effective. And this is another thing we could go on for hours about. But one thing I love doing is finding a story or finding information that you don't have and getting to share it with you first and vice versa. And we had two great examples of that this week because you brought to my attention a Tucker Carlson interview with a Dutch historian named Rutger Bregman. And it was fucking fantastic. So literally, you sent this to me. I listened to it. It did not get aired yet.
Well, Tucker Carlson said he's not putting it out there.
Is that because he told the guy to fuck off?
Yeah, I mean, it was... So, the Rutger Bregman, he was at the Davos conference, which is a massive conference on basically...
Global
economics, right? And... At this conference, he says, listen, you've got these billionaires who are all flying in on jets, and we're talking about how to make the world economy better, but we're not talking about taxes, right? I mean, and you can go out and Google it. I'll find a link to it and tweet it out on our site. But he says, the key is, like, you guys are not being taxed the way you should be. Some of you are not paying taxes at all. And he's speaking to a room of billionaires,
right?
You know, your Warren Buffett's, your Bill Gates, and everybody else. And he says, you guys are not being taxed the way that you should. And, you know, multiple people have put an argument out there that once you make a certain amount of money, right, over $10 million, over $1 billion, then at some point in time, you need to start being taxed at, you know, 80, 70, 90% of the dollar after you get to that point, right? Which the funniest part about that is the people who are most adamant against that are people who make $50,000 a year.
Or less,
which is fucking hilarious, right? Like, you need to focus on some other shit. Stop worrying about the billionaires who give zero fucks about you. That being said, he says it in front of this group of people, and they're all kind of like, well, okay, all right. So then Tucker Carlson thinks it's a great moment, so he has him on the show, and immediately kind of starts...
It's a pre-interview. Now he was not on the show.
It's a pre-interview for the show, and he's just like, hey, I can't believe you said that. I said the same thing, man. Like, we're two guys thinking on the same level. Like, so tell me, how do you get, you know... And so Rutger Bregman goes in and he's just like, yeah, this is what I said. And the conversation, like, it kind of goes back and forth. And he talks about how, you know, big media companies are, you know, they're controlling the message and they're the ones who aren't calling out these billionaires for what they should. And the historian says, you know, you and, you know, Sean Hannity, like, and Laura Ingraham, you guys aren't calling out these billionaires and for the taxes that they're not paying. I mean, you guys are millionaires being controlled by billionaires, you know, the head of Fox, and you're not saying it either, right? And Tucker Carlson's like, wait, whoa, what? You're saying that the Fox tells me what to say, right? So then they get this back and forth, right? And the best part of this that I think for me is when Tucker Carlson accuses this guy of never seeing his show. Right, the guy's like, well,
you don't have Fox News and
right, like, you don't have Fox News there. The guy's like, what are you talking about? Like, I have the internet.
What do you mean? He literally said, like, before I go on a show, I do my research.
Right, so. Before I go on a show, I do my research. I have the internet. I've watched you and other shows on Fox, and no one's saying this. And Tucker Carlson's response is, I highly doubt it. Like, how could this be? How could this dude in this place over there across the pond have the internet and have the ability to watch my show? And it goes back to one thing, Jim.
They're not that smart.
Right. These people aren't that smart, whether they're on Fox or MSNBC or in Congress or in the fucking Senate. They're in
Congress, right?
Sometimes I think we put these people on a pedestal because of the position that they hold, but they're in a position of talking, right? And they expose themselves over and over and over again with just some of the dumb shit that they do, right? Now, when you have a spotlight, like, listen, we all do dumb shit. I do. I say dumb shit on the show all the time. I say dumb shit that I probably wish I could take back. I say stuff that I believe is accurate that I come back and find out later isn't. And I try to correct myself right when I can. or when I remember to. Just our day-to-day interactions, we do dumb things. Everybody does it, right? So these people are on a spot, or they're under a spotlight.
Right.
And so obviously you're not going to be perfect all the time. Although there are some who have done a really good job of doing being that. But this is a situation where when you listen to Tucker Carlson's interaction with this particular guy, if you haven't paid any attention to Tucker Carlson, if you have, then you probably already figured out that he's not that bright. But this sort of interaction,
I think most people on Fox, most Fox News fans consider him to be their guy.
I understand. But I mean, if you're just watching it objectively, once you see his interaction with this guy, you see that maybe not all the lights on are in the house.
Right. I mean, so I've known a bunch of girls.
All
the lights are on, the house are on, or yeah.
Not all the house lights are on.
All right. While you break this down. So
once again, I'm not very bright.
I know you're actually a smart guy. And you got a job, unlike me. I was hoping to make you spit that out. I really was. I was done.
It's soda water, and that would have burned.
And
fuck you.
And it was would have been funny. Payback, bitch. So if you ever heard a girl say, you know, I have resting bitch face, you know, I'm not like, Tucker Carlson has resting dumbass face. And I really wish I could have seen his face during this conversation. Because when he freezes, and I have accidentally and intentionally frozen him while watching about Fox News at the right moment, and it is comical.
Like, he should pay someone to close his mouth when he's, you know, just come up and push his chin up. You know, just,
oh, God.
You know, yes. Just a nice girl, you know, little intern.
Right. Oh, no, that, you know, Fox had enough trouble with that, though.
An intern from American University or something like that, you know.
Okay.
And just close his mouth, right, for him.
So that story was great, and again, we'll tweet something out, and it's hilarious to listen to, especially when Tucker Carlson finally just loses it and tells the guy to fuck off, tells him he's a moron, and the guy says, I know you're not going to air this, and they won't, but we got to hear it anyway, and it was beautiful.
Because the guy put it out on you. The guy put it out himself. He's just like, so, by the way, check this interview out that I did with Tucker Carlson, right, that he won't air, and you'll figure out why. He basically tells me to
fuck off. Not basically.
Right, no.
In actuality. And so I want to talk about this other thing, and I want to talk about it from a media perspective and an image presented standpoint, because a story came out a couple weeks ago about this guy who got attacked. It was a Colorado jogger, gets attacked by a mountain lion, and the headline reads, you know, he fought off the mountain lion and literally suffocated or choked it to death. And that immediately paints the image in my mind of, this is a bad motherfucker.
Right.
He took on a mountain lion.
Like, I'm thinking, first of all, like, you think of a mountain lion and you think of, like, a cougar, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think
a 100 and some
150, 200 pound, just
monstrous animal cat.
And so that's immediately what I thought. Right?
And that's what the article sounded like.
Yes.
And so then I texted you. I had so much fun doing this. I texted you and said, hey, did you hear about the guy that killed the mountain lion? And my prediction was you were going, yeah, heard about it a couple weeks ago. Really not news. Good for this guy. Whatever. And then I followed up with, did you hear that the cat actually weighed 40 pounds and was described in the news in multiple sources, Fox and New York Times among them, as a kitten? Now, I don't mean to. I am diminishing. But dealing with a 40-pound wild cat would be no fun. My cat went psycho on me when I was, you know, in college, and it shredded my hands or whatever, but it was a fucking 12-pound cat.
Your ass this, by a cat.
They got claws, they got teeth, and they go psycho.
Yes.
But, and so dealing with that would be no small, but it weighed 40 fucking pounds. It was 3 to 4 months old and was a kitten.
Which completely changes the story.
It does. And I love how it gets presented, and then you read it, and you put something in your mind.
But once you sent me that, I'm like, well, how the fuck did you get attacked? Like what happened? Like, why couldn't you
just... You were carrying a ball of yarn.
Right, like, what? Seriously, like, he had catnip in his balls or something. Like, why didn't you just fucking kick it? I mean, 40 pounds, like, a good swift kick, you know, from a strong guy. I mean, like, it completely changes the dynamic of the story. And I'm like, well, like, now you seem just kind of like a dick. Like, you killed it?
You choked out a kitty?
Why? Why did you have to kill it? Like, I mean, I get it was pissed off and it's 40 pound teeth and claws, I guess. I've never been attacked by a wild cat of any size.
Right.
Right? For, right. I've never been attacked. I mean, there was one cat, this girl that I hooked up with once in college, she had a cat in her dorm room that she wasn't supposed to have. And it was like the meanest cat ever. It was like in the windowsill and the way her bed was bunked, it like clawed around her head. It was awful. That's the closest I've been.
All right.
But I managed to not break the cat's neck. Right? Like, I mean, because I could have just grabbed it by its head and twisted. So, I mean, let's add 30 pounds to that cat is my only way of dealing with it, to get it in a rear naked choke
and make it tap out. He used his boot, by the way. So he stepped on its throat and killed it.
Okay, so this guy's a psycho.
I'm not going to call the guy any names. But it's hilarious to me.
He's a murderous psycho.
I mean, there's no guarantee if he'd have taken his foot off the cat that it would have run away. However, just, I love the story from a media, here's the headline, and then the rest of it creeps out. I loved your text response to me was, get the fuck out of here. That's
all you said. You have to understand, like, I'm thinking that he's getting fucking attacked by Shere Khan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from the Jungle Book.
It was
my favorite Disney movie ever.
It was so funny to me that I texted you that totally with the intention of setting you up.
That was a good setup.
Wait till the punchline comes. It was a kitten.
Like, I'm fucking busy.
I'm presuming you're like, dude, we're not talking about a three week old story about some jogger that choked out a cat.
Just to put it in perspective, I was working out when you sent that, right? Like, so I'm in between sets. So I read the first text and I reply, like, okay,
this is better than I knew.
Right? Like, so then I go and I do the next set, right? And then I pick up my phone again to like set the timer or whatever I do. I see another text from you. I'm like, what, Jim? And then it's just like,
it weighs 40 pounds.
I'm like, I didn't know
what else.
Get
the fuck out of here.
Right. And then like I put my phone down.
You're like, you can't be right. This is kind of
right. Like, I was like, damn it, I don't have time. Like, I got to go back and do the next set. And then I come back and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Explain yourself.
I love this so fucking much.
I was good,
though. The 40 pounds. I mean, that's 40 pounds of animal with claws and teeth. It's no joke.
I guess I can't completely blame the guy for the story.
Right? I think that was unfair. If I get attacked by a coyote, which is roughly 40 pounds,
right.
20, 30 pounds, and I step on its neck and kill it because it was trying to bite me,
that's fair.
I would do that.
I guess.
But we're talking about the fucking squirrel that I got to deal with in my house. I've got a squirrel problem.
I love how you think that this is going to go away.
No, it's not going to go away. I'm going to shoot the fucker.
Okay.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that.
I'm not bailing you out.
I know you're not. I don't expect you to.
You can't use a 22.
I will not use a firearm. I will use a slingshot or a pellet gun.
Oh, God. Don't put your eye out.
I will not. You'll shoot your eye out, kid. If he chooses to leave voluntarily, I'll put an eviction notice up there if the squirrel leaves voluntarily. All right, so punchline is I got a squirrel crawling around in the space behind.
I think they figured that out.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Anyway, I love that story. I love how it came out in those two segments. Like, they recovered the body. They weighed it. It weighed 25 pounds because it had been, animals had eaten part of it. They said, yeah, it probably weighed 40 pounds when it was alive. And I thought that was hysterical. Anyway, another thing. After we had this conversation at the bar last night, which was fun. It was good hanging out and just chill and drink it with you. It was also, by the way, the most responsible night of drinking we have ever had. I mean, we had like two beers and a shot over 2 hours.
I don't know if you really need to put our bad habits out in the ether.
Oh, well, people listen to us, Steve. And we were talking about movies in general, and we just released a sort of a bonus episode with my friend Joey Gentile talking about the Oscars and all that shenanigans. And we talked about the movie The Jerk. I don't even remember how we got on that topic. But we were talking about how The Jerk is a movie you could not make today. And to a degree, I want to argue against that. But realistically, no studio would produce that movie today. It would have to be an independent film, and it would go nowhere. If you don't know the movie The Jerk, it's a movie starring Steve Martin from the late 70s, I'm guessing, early 80s maybe.
Yeah, and I think it's late 70s.
And you know, it starts off with Steve Martin saying, I grew up a poor black child. Steve Martin grew up in a black family, and it's a movie with a lot of racial tones and a lot. It's a fucking hilarious movie. I personally love the advice that his father gives him growing up. He hands him he picks up a thing of shoe polish. He's like, "This is shit." Points to a pile of shit. "This is Shinola, and don't trust Whitey." And anyway. So when you say that movie can't be made today, and I had a similar conversation with Joey when he was in here about Blazing Saddles, another movie that would not get made today, even though the racism in the movie is clearly criticizing white people for racism, not actually promoting racially, you know, racism in and of itself. I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it. When people say you can't make that movie today, you can, but no one will. And this is an issue where...
can you make the movie?
Sure.
Sure you can.
Can you sell it?
You know, will it get picked up? Will people buy tickets to go see it? Will people be entertained by it? Or
any answer? Yes, they would.
Well,
I
think the answer is yes. The question though is the backlash. Right? Like what sort of backlash are you going to get from women's groups? What sort of backlash are you going to get from
NAACP,
what are you going to get from, you know, all these different groups? And then, because what will happen is, you know, and then what kind of support do you get? Like, right? I mean, because you get the support from the wrong group, right? Like if Breitbart backs it, then it's just like, oh, can I like this still? You know, I mean, like there's just, you know, I mean, and so you have all that. So how does that impact the movie, right? And so that raises the question. That's where... you get that idea that you can't make some of these movies from the past, which are we consider classics. You can't make them now because studios just like they weigh all those options. Sure. Right? You put a movie out there that you want to get made. They look at it. Is the story any good? And clearly, they don't really focus on that because of some of the shit that gets put out there. But the question is, how do we make money off of it? And then what hurts us? Is there anybody that's going to come out? Like, is there going to be something that impacts a sale? Right, the sale of tickets, the sale of, you know, not even DVDs anymore, right. But, you know, is Netflix going to pick Dollars. It up or, you know, the Red Box or what have you. And so that's, I think, where it comes from, the idea like, yeah, you could put it together and you could make it, but will a studio take it?
The answer is clearly no.
Right.
And, you know, I wonder what would happen if something like that got re-released, like if Blazing Saddles or The Jerk or even Tropic Thunder is probably the most recent example of a movie that people would cringe at in terms of, you know, is this going to be acceptable? And that's not that long ago. And that movie's hysterical.
Yeah, well, I guess actually, you know, maybe I guess I'm going to contradict myself. Yeah, I think you could. You just need the right group of people, right? I mean, because, you know, someone brought up Tropic Thunder not too long ago in terms of blackface, right?
Right.
People should be all over Robert Downey Jr. because he put on blackface for that movie. But it was... like, it was satire within satire.
Right.
Right? I mean, it was a movie about making a movie. It was a movie about making a bad movie and acknowledging the racism in it. And they directly kind of confronted that.
Absolutely.
And so, I guess I take it back. Could you make a movie like The Jerk today? Yeah, I'm sure someone would. Right? I'm sure someone would.
There's not really any... I mean, the most recent example that I can think of that gets into that territory is Tropic Thunder.
It's hard for me, though, because, I mean, I really don't see a lot of movies anymore unless it's...
I don't either.
And, you know, unless it's one of the Marvel movies or, or it's John Wick for the 100th time.
John Wick 12, The Quickening.
Three's coming out.
The Wickening.
Three's coming out.
If I'm going to flip races on this and say Get Out was a movie that shined a lot of light on racial issues. Now, it shined it from a different perspective, and it was a really good movie. So because the movie really criticized white microaggressions towards black people, that was a safer move. But it was still a movie that shined a light and was, I mean, a really fucking good movie.
So, Jordan Peele,
yep.
Is making a new movie.
Okay.
And it looks like they're going to flip it. And it looks like...
It'll be called Get In?
No, you don't need it. I think the name of the movie is called Us.
Or okay.
Something like that.
All right.
And it looks like you're going to have one or a few black serial killers.
Okay.
Of some sort. I don't know. It looks... it's hard to say because all I saw was... the cover art for it,
all right.
Or the poster art for it, and there's not a lot of detail out there, but it's in production. I think with the success of Get Out, there's going to be a fair amount of anticipation for it.
Sure.
And it looks like something sketchy is going on, and the black people may be the aggressors this time around. So it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with.
I will check into that on Google shortly. All right, before we get going, I know you're heading to Columbus and you're on a bit of a time crunch here, but Bryce Harper signed a massive deal to play for the Phillies. It was 13 years and $330 million, if I remember correctly.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, I remember you going to Maryland and watching him play for the Nationals and saying, seeing this guy even compared to other Major League Baseball players, you saw what the hype was about. I mean, this guy's a beast.
He can ball.
Right.
I mean, listen.
Whether he's worth that money, different discussion, but dude can ball.
He got paid it, so yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But he's got an amazing swing. Is it Ken Griffey swing? No, but I mean, it's one of the purest swings. I've seen Ken Griffey play live multiple times. So, you know, I'm a little bit biased. Is it Barry Bonds, you know, just flick of a toothpick? No. But, I mean, it's a really pure swing. He's amazingly athletic. Playing in outfield, he covers, you feel like you actually only need two outfielders with him because of the amount of ground that he covers and the fact that his arm is literally maybe a bionic cannon.
He might not have Kenny Lofton range, but he's got serious range. He's got a cannon for an arm.
No. He's got Kenny Lofton.
Okay.
Maybe more.
Oh, that's a bold statement.
I know it's bold, but Jim, I watched him live cover an amazing amount of ground in a very limited amount of time and be able to fire the ball home. The guy can just flat out ball. I'm a diehard Kenny Lofton fan. I love that whole Indians team, and the Indians getting rid of Kenny Lofton is a pain in my heart. That being said, Bryce Harper is the real deal on every level of baseball, and he deserves. I mean, listen. Does anybody deserve $330 million? I mean, I guess probably not. But if some motherfucker is willing to pay me, I will accept it all the way to the bank.
Absolutely.
So I will not criticize him or judge him or judge the people who pay him because, frankly, I am looking for my $331 million payday. Because when I find it, we probably won't be doing this show anymore.
Or we could do it all the time, because what else would we have to worry about?
No, man.
Fuck you.
I'm going to be somewhere. Listen, I'll break you out. Look, $330 million, I'll break you enough off where we can go both island.
Okay.
Right, and we can podcast.
Island to island podcast.
We can do an island to island podcast, right? And I won't even make fun of you about not having a job anymore.
I will find a way to travel to your island with said break-off money. the best part about this is...
That's the funny part where you think you'd be invited.
I'm not telling you where my island is, bitch. Just go someplace here. And by the way, you're in the North Atlantic. I'm in the Caribbean. You're in the North Atlantic.
If I got that type of money, I would totally do it, too.
You would probably hire people to make sure I couldn't get off and, like, enjoy Iceland's whatever. All right, anyway.
This is your own version of Get Out.
The best part about this, though, is one of my friends from the comedy scene put out on Facebook, and I sent it to you and a few other friends, that... when his deal expires in 2031, there will still be 4 years on Bobby Bonilla's contract with the Mets.
Jim,
that is fucking amazing.
Bobby Bonilla's contract, maybe besides, because Bryce Harper got, you know, $331 million, right? So he got, I don't know, 20 times what Bobby Bonilla got.
Right.
But just the beauty of it. My man gets $1.19 million every July 1st until the year 2035. Started
and he retired in 2001.
He retired in 2001, and the payment started in 2011. Can you believe
and
this?
He's still getting that is that last night you said I'm going to be 60 whatever or 50 whatever, and I said yeah I'm going to be dead.
Right. It just
but I you think, laughed a bit too hard at. By the way, I was a little.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's just accepting the truth. But
thanks.
I'll be 50. I think I'll be 55.
All right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'll be 55. When Bobby Bonilla is no longer being paid. Well, the first summer that Bobby Bonilla doesn't get a $1.19 million check from the Mets, that first summer he doesn't get that check, I'll be 56. Because he will, because he gets it in 35.
Right.
Like in 2035, he gets it.
That is so awesome. I mean, let's do the math.
Could you imagine his agent? So I wonder, did his agent get paid up front or does his agent get paid yearly?
That's like that whole, do you take the lump sum if you win the lottery, or do you take the...
I would
take the lump sum, but...
I would probably... deferred payments? Yeah. I mean, because you got the income at that point. But you got
if he's getting 10% every year until 2035,
right.
That's good work if you can get it.
If you figure his agent was 10, 15 years older than him, maybe. I mean, just, you know, if you have the
logical gesture.
Right? I mean, then the agent's just like, here's my retirement plan. Now I can take a risk and I can go be a professional curler like I always wanted to.
Can you imagine being in the room when that contract gets worked out? It's like, hey, we offered you all this. It's not working out. We're going to take a break from paying you. But when we start again, you get $1.19 million a year until... You're 75 years old.
Well, could you imagine being the agent, right?
That's awesome.
All right, Bobby, here's the deal. So this is how your contract's going to work. You're not getting paid next year. Actually, you're not going to get paid for another 10 years. Okay, well, screw that. You screwed up. Okay, but what is going to happen is every summer on July 1st, right, four days before Independence Day, you will get a check for $1.19 million
until you are literally too old to spend that money.
Right. Every year.
That is so awesome. That is so awesome. All right, man.
I love this place.
America. Fuck yeah. I mean, we could go on and on about this. This is such a funny story.
I don't know what else can you say about it. I mean,
it's great. It is so funny that you look at Bryce Harper and go, he's getting paid for 13 years.
But
and
think Bobby about how they like, have to
hold my beer.
Right. Think about how, I mean, you know, the sports industry, people change, you know, executive offices all the time, accounting, all that other shit. So, like, you have to leave a post-it note. Oh, by the way, on July 1st, cut a check to this guy. What is this for and who is this guy? Yeah.
Right. There's people who are like, I wasn't born when this contract got signed.
Right. They come to that deal. In the early 2000s, we're at 2018. So, I mean, there are people, or 2019. So, there are people who were kids.
Yeah.
Right. There are people who probably worked for the Mets who were,
elementary school. Yes.
Right. Like 5, 10 years old when that contract was signed. Some of those kids.
I wish I knew who the general manager of the Mets is right now.
Right.
Off the top of my head.
I mean, if you think about where the kids were when he signed that contract and where they'll be, you know, when he's no longer getting money, like how far careers advance. It's
awesome. So let me real quick, we got to wrap this up. Whenever a monster deal like this gets signed, I always ask myself, like, when's the last time one of them paid off? You had A-Rod with Texas that didn't work out for Texas. You had...
You could argue, because he signed another monster deal for the Yankees. And, I mean, they got a World Series out of it.
They did. Well, they had World Series before that, though, that were...
Okay, but they won with him,
and he was the... Even though he had typically not performed in the playoffs that year, he balled out in the playoffs. Albert Pujols signed a monster deal to leave St. Louis. Didn't really pay off in Anaheim.
Didn't at all.
Albert Pujols, to me, is... the best pure hitter I've ever seen. Like, I think he's amazing.
He's not better than Barry Bonds.
Okay, and I've seen Barry Bonds live, but Pujols was a... All right.
I mean, Bonds, I'm not... Listen, We're talking 1A, 1C. Right, right. And here, then, I mean, but there's... I mean, I just, Barry Bond gets a bad rap because of the whole steroid human growth hormone thing, but the dude was just ridiculous with a bat in his hand.
He was.
I mean, it just.
And
you literally could not pitch to him. You could not pitch to him, otherwise, it was going to be a home run. Not a base hit, not a double. It was going to be a home run.
As much as I don't like Barry Bonds for a bunch of reasons, he is the only player I ever know that was intentionally walked with the bases loaded.
Yes.
They literally said, we will take one run. We're not throwing today. You something you can
not
hit.
Not today, Barry.
And I remember saying back when the year he broke the record, I talked about how home run friendly the ballpark in San Francisco was, and I was dead wrong. Yeah. I ended up looking up.
Right.
I had this argument, and my buddy that I had this argument with, the next day comes in and is like, here's the stats, bitch. This is one of the toughest ballparks to hit a home run in. And this guy has left the park. Not hit a home run. Literally landed in the ocean.
Right. There's nobody kayaking in fucking McCovey Bay anymore.
Or whatever it is. Like, yeah, it is McCovey Bay.
Right. Yeah, people would go out there and kayak and
because
wait,
they wanted to catch Barry Bonds home run balls.
And now,
yeah.
Like, there's nobody. Like, it's just some guy who got lost by accident.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no threat of him getting hit in the head.
Barry Bonds was, and the other thing about Barry Bonds, they didn't pitch to him. He still hit all those home runs. Again, the guy's a jerk. I'm not a fan, but dude could fucking bash. Fair. Right. And again, 1A, 1B, you could even throw in, I'll talk baseball and hitters for way too long to keep anyone's interest, but yeah, fair.
Barry Bonds was. You can make the argument for, oh my God. For the Padres.
Tony Gwynn?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Paul Molitor is another guy who was just a phenomenal hitter, and Don Mattingly was my favorite growing up, Wade Boggs. But Barry Bonds, average power and an eye, right? He drew so many walks because he could lay off pitches that weren't close, or that were close, and then when you had to give in and give him something he could hit, he could hit it. All right, man. I would love to keep going. You're on the schedule. You got to roll. Good talking to you as always. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, and all that stuff. Steve at Whiskey Congress, Jim at Whiskey Congress to email us. Thanks for listening. Proper 12. Try it. Good bottle. Conor McGregor, good for you.
Who the fuck was that?
Who the fuck? All right, we are out.